And welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We're so glad that you are with us tonight. We are live, and this month we are starting off a new topic tonight on character training, child behavior, kind of all in that category. What do you do? And about tantrums. That is what we're talking about tonight. And how to overcome them for good. My guest, Marcy, I didn't even ask you, Marcy, how to say your last name.
Melzer.
Melzer. Okay. So it is like it's...
Like, it is like it's spelled. Yep. Marcy Mel.
Awesome. Well, we're going to talk about how to calm kids and overcome tantrums. And so we definitely want you to be part of our conversation. So make sure that you put your comments or questions in the feed, and we will incorporate those into our discussion. Marcy seems like she can handle some twists and turns in her conversation. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. But we're just glad that you're watching with us, whether you're on YouTube, Facebook, or Periscope. Just know that if you put your comments in the feed, we can see them from all of those places. So we're excited to talk about this topic and to kick off this month with helping you with some of these very challenging topics. So definitely make sure that you bring those into the conversation with us. And I also want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. You can learn more about them at knotgrass.com. And we'll talk a little bit more about halfway through a little bit about the curriculum that they offer parents who are homeschooling children and looking for options for history. So as we're getting started, Marcy, I would just like our audience to get to know you a little better. And also, just what made you become so passionate in talking about child behavior? I know that you work as a therapist, and I'm assuming you've seen some behavior.
Right. So, yeah. Well, first of all, thanks you very much, very much to have me on. I am very excited to talk to your audience. I am, in fact, a speech and language pathologist, but I don't work as a therapist anymore. Mm. About 4 years ago, I quit altogether being a therapist, and I shifted my practice to being a 100% full-time coach and consultant. Awesome. To where I equip and empower parents to actually get better outcomes. They are, the parents that I coach are helping their children shift from nonverbal communication, no matter what they're using. If they're using their basic behaviors, if they are even in systems. I've got, you know, adolescent age parents with adolescent age kids who join my program who are working them off of picture systems and sign language and you know, letter boards and things like that to actually empower them with spoken language, because really what empowers these kids to be successful in the world is speech. And I know that all of those methods of communication are better than nothing, right? But the spoken language is really what parents want for their kids. And so I have found a way through language facilitation to guide parents to find that spoken language through their everyday activities at home. And so that's why I'm really excited to talk to your homeschooling parents, because the parents who have taken on the responsibility to do this instead of hiring a therapist to come or taking their kid to the sessions, you know, 30 minutes, 60 minutes a week, they're learning how it works themselves so that they can never shut it off. They're 24/7 facilitating language. And that's why their kids make progress so much faster, because it's connected. And there's lots of reasons, obviously, that parents are better.
It's so true. You know, with all those shifts and changes, we don't realize how that can affect our children. And just coming from different sources, where it can be highly confusing to our children too.
That's right. I think, you know, parents are often presented with communication systems that are necessary for kids to succeed elsewhere, like in the school or in the therapy. Like, they need this system to be able to communicate with other people. The things that the kids are already communicating with their parents non-verbally, right? Mm-hmm. But educators or therapists or even babysitters, right, can't understand a child the way a mom or dad or the primary caregiver, mm-hmm. the one that stays with them all the time, because the reality is, even though they don't have speech or any kind of structured communication, lay talkers are communicating all every day, all day through their behavior. Yes. And that's why that's why this is such a great topic for your behavior month, right? Where we're looking and focusing on how do we know about why these behaviors are happening? And the reality is every behavior from a smirk, a smile, a kiss, a slug, a run out of the room is a communication. And so when parents learn how to interpret those things and turn it into the spoken language that the child is actively trying to communicate. When it's so successful, right?
Exactly. Because we can take it so personally too. And that's, I think, where we start to mess up. I know it was my issue too. I was like, I kept blaming myself, but it really was a communication that I wasn't understanding. It's this language, you know, like you're talking about, it's kind of like this hidden language that we don't know about that our kids have.
Right.
So I,
well, the thing is they try to teach you, but unfortunately the language they're using might be tantrums this week or hitting this week or throwing things this week. And that's not the kind of language that you want. That you want to respond to, you know, you don't like that kind of language. So you want to change it. And that's where the breakdown happens, right? Mm-hmm. Because the child's trying to communicate something. And what it is their drama, right? Every child has drama. The littlest thing is big to little kids. And without the language, the spoken language to say, I'm annoyed by you, or why can't I have another 5 minutes on the iPad, or why can't I eat macaroni? Because they're all why can't I have everything I want right now, right now, right? I mean, they're very egotistical kids. I mean, it's just how they are. And until a parent realizes what to do with all of that communication. Wait, sometimes you can have what you want. Sometimes you can, right? Yeah. It's all of that stuff. But like you said, I think the big problem happens when parents get distracted by their own worries or fears or whatever, because they see a behavior they don't like and they're worried, oh no, maybe this is the new norm in our house and I don't want this new norm.
Right. Yeah. We can project it out like till they're 18 and go, oh my goodness, they're going to be in jail.
It happens immediately, doesn't it? And they hear and talk about their 2-year-old. They're like, this is the one that's going to be this and this is the one that's going to be that.
Right. Exactly.
You have those ideas in your head and it's amazing how they guide those fantasies, right? They guide your actions. And that's when parents get in trouble, because behavior is no joke. These big behaviors like we're talking about, they cause stress. They cause stress. And whenever there's stress and anxiety, the child's having stress so that they want to project it, right? They're projecting onto the parent. And the parent absorbs that, because the parents absorb everything. Yeah, you know, they get the good, the bad, the ugly, they get everything. And then let's say that mom has a busy job or two or three or four other kids, or a husband who's got a very stressful job and he needs to, like, extra whatever, you know, or there's illness in your family, or you've got to move, or you have a new baby, or anything new like that. And your energy has to get, as a parent or a wife or a household member or a boss or a worker or anybody, that role gets into play. And then that behavior, that communication behavior, comes in on top of that other stress, and it can really send a family down a real sad path, right? Where they start to disconnect from each other, where you're not helping me, I'm not helping you, I got to go do my thing, you got to go do your thing. And then they start to separate and separate and separate. And then it gets worse and worse and worse. So I think that's the biggest, those are the red flags that I see that kind of lead up. it's anxiety. It always starts with stress and anxiety, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you're talking about these times when we kind of hit those, I guess they would be down, they'd be valleys, not peaks.
Right.
You know, when our kids get more inflexible, we feel like they're more sensitive, they're demanding, they're controlling, they're needy. And we want to turn things around, yet we feel like we're just digging ourselves deeper. Do you have some strategies that parents can use to reverse those trends when they notice the frequency of disagreements just escalating?
Right. I'm glad you asked. So what happens usually is, like I said, when parents get stressed out, they take reactionary, they react quickly. Mm-hmm. And so the strategy that I like to share is you have to train yourself to do this, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's a real need to be conscious in the moment, you know, when you start to see these things, because what you want to do is, especially if you start to notice they're happening more frequently, you know, because everybody has a bad day. You know, everybody has ups and downs.
In fact, exactly. I talk about
Waves of Communication is the name of my platform because the progress goes up and down all the time. And like I said, it doesn't matter. One little stressor can throw things really off. Mm-hmm. Hey, click on the comments so we can see if anybody's commenting, just so we can follow up.
I haven't seen any yet.
None coming yet. I just want to make sure. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So the advice that I have is when you start to see a change in the trend, you have to sort of look at trends with behavior, because everybody has triggers, you know, a shocking thing. You know, fall and hurt yourself, right? That's going to set you off. And it's an obvious thing. But when you sort of notice either your fuse is sort of shorter these days and you find yourself being triggered more often, or you find your child being triggered more often, where things they used to be okay with, they're not so okay with anymore. Mm-hmm. You know how everybody has those valleys, and it can be a day or a week or, you know, longer sometimes. Hopefully not, because what I want you to do is start to pay attention, because the first step in all of this is to pay attention to the trends. And what I encourage parents to do is look for what I call blockages to the connection, because even though a child may not be great at communicating using spoken language, right? Even if a child can talk, when they're anxious, they're not going to be good at their spoken language anyway. Mm-hmm. They can't find their words as easy. They withdraw. They'll, you know, like I said, sort of start to avoid you. Mm-hmm. And you feel the distance growing between you and your child. What a lot of parents will do is they want to like throw an energetic lasso on that child and reel them in like a fishing, you know,
exactly.
Like, hey, I feel like you're away from me. Just like if they got away from you in the parking lot, where's my child? Where's my child? You want to draw them in. You want to pull them in. Right now, the unfortunate reality is, you can't pull them in until you realize why they left in the first place. Okay. Yeah. Because again, if they left in the first place because they've got an issue where they with you, maybe you're less patient than you were, or maybe they've got an issue with someone else and they don't know how to talk about it with you. Like I said, they could be triggered by any outside thing, just like you could be triggered as a parent by your outside things. And you bring that energy to the relationship with your child. And then you start to see, maybe it's because we're spending less time together. Because what parents will blame it on is he's watching too many violent movies, or she. The child is doing things that they're forgetting how their energy is coming to the connection. Right. So you have to analyze both. Because it could be a disconnect, like maybe your child is hooked on tech, like they get sucked into their favorite show and they're starting to get obsessed and hooked on it. And and you don't realize that because you've been busy working. And then all of a sudden now you've got a kiddo who's, you know, you can't get off the tech and you've got to solve that. You know, all these things that come up that cause a disconnect. I want something different than you want. Right. And that's when I start to avoid you. I start to get sneaky as a child. I'll hide to try to get these things that you're not giving me, or I'll go around you. I'll go to other people, right? Take my communication away from you because you're not a helpful person right now. So what you think about, the first thing you think about as a parent is when you feel your child pulling away, start to observe them. Pull out your binoculars and start to watch them. Watch them and see, where is the disconnect? Where is the blockage? Now, I give parents three clues. It can be these things that trigger the disconnect to start. It can be a physical thing, right? Oh, so if your child's not well, you can have a physical block.
If it's like the next day you realize that they were sick and you didn't.
Exactly. Especially for nonverbal. Especially if they're nonverbal, so they right?
Yep.
If they've got an ear infection, they're allergy suffering, they got a splinter in their finger. Who knows? Some physiological thing that they don't know how to tell you. So that's always the first place parents look. They check them over top to bottom, right? Are you okay? Is anything bleeding? You know, whatever.
Right.
So
exactly.
Always look there first. Always look there first. And then there's two other areas. The next one is environmental. And we already talked a little about that. Are there any new triggers or new habits? Because it could happen over time, like the tech addiction problem. Or it could be a big trigger like new baby, moving, you know, that kind of thing. But either way, there's been a change in the environment, how the energy flows around. Mom is distracted. Dad is distracted. Child is distracted. Teacher is distracted. Somebody's pulled their energy away from the connection. And it's due to an environmental thing, right? And it happens to everybody.
Notice, like, smells, you know, a new smell in the house. I mean, you add some kind of, you know, something like even a new soap to your laundry, and that could, like, set your kid off.
You decide you want to try a new recipe for their favorite thing. Like, you forget the sugar, or you decide you want to, like, swap in veggies and try to swap. They know. They know. So one little thing. So the deal is, when you have these physiological or environmental, and then the next one is mindset. And that's what happens sort of when the first two go undiscovered, right? Then what happens is, you don't realize that your child had an ear infection. So they're pulling on their ears, and then you think, oh no, he's got a sensory problem. Right. But because you didn't look at that physiological thing first, you got the wrong answer to the problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
And your mindset is thinking, give him medicine, and it's not, you know, or don't give him medicine, or they're being naughty. Right.
Right.
But when they're really sick or tired or cranky or hangry, or, you know, however.
Exactly.
All that stuff. And because parents, especially parents who homeschool, who are with their kids all day, are used to, like, how is the day being spent? From the time the child wakes up till the time they go to bed. And you've got all your categories of things to do. But when those schedules go off because some new environmental thing comes in, that can stress out a parent. I didn't get my jobs done. I didn't get my curriculum finished. I didn't get, we didn't get. And then they start to feel bad about themselves, right? Or when the child pulls away, and the parent says, they try to pull them back, you know, like we talked about, they try to pull them back, but the child doesn't want to come. Then the parent feels like there's something wrong, either physically, probably physically, with their kid, or they start to beat themselves up because there is nothing wrong with their kid, and I'm not a smart parent because I'm not intuitive with my child. And literally all that worry, all that he's not, the judging, the comparing, the all the stuff, like, he's not like his brother, or then they start Googling on websites, what is, could it be, and should I homeschool or should I not? All of that time worrying, whatever, is away, taking away from what this child needs right now is more of you, more understanding of you, more just your kind energy in their space, understanding what their problem, their drama is. And when you talk about those things, then you understand, oh, those light bulbs go off. Oh, it was because of this. It was because of that. And then you realize it was either a trigger that you can work through. okay, we have a new baby, we have a new life, we've got to have a new thing. You train your kids to tolerate the new child, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, a brand new habit that is a bad habit, like a tech thing where you're like, okay, I know that we didn't have boundaries around this before, but we've got to have new boundaries and this is where we're going to go. All of that comes after you go through these storms. Time when you have this disconnection and the only way to get through is with negotiation. I understand you are lacking something. I've got that. I'll give it to you, but it has to be on my terms. You know what I mean? All the rules and regs and things that kids need, especially homeschool parents, understand this. You can't let your kids willy-nilly all over the house. There's time for that, right? But if you want to get anything done, you have to have some structure, and the kids need direction because they're not as smart as you are, as much as they think they are. They do need guidance from you as parents and caregivers. So I think that's it. When you see these things, put on your analysis and find the blockage to your connected energy, physical blockage, environmental blockage, or emotional and mindset that are blocking you from doing the kind of interaction that your child needs to get them out of that problem.
Yeah. You know, just listening to you talk, you know, it seems like we as parents are better at triggering and escalating issues than bringing them down. just by what we say and how, you know, even the emotions our kids pick up from us. So what can a parent say to get kids to change unwanted behavior that we want, to avoid escalating those situations into a tantrum? Because they don't start as tantrums.
No, not always. No, not usually. Mm-hmm. In fact, they rarely do. Only when it's a big trigger, like, you know.
Yes, kind of right. Thing. Yes.
But most parents, like you said, that point of you can kind of see it coming, right?
Yeah.
But there are parents that are they own their solution so much that they're not flexible enough to ride the wave as it's coming in, right? You can feel the energy wave coming, but if you hold firm, they're gonna crash. Okay.
So
I recommend, the thing is, as soon as you see it coming, there are trigger words. It's all the biggies. Stop. No, don't. It's wrong. No, thank you. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Soon as those negative words come, because those are the first ones a lot of them learn the meaning of, because that's what parents say normally. If someone is coming at you, you're going to say no. It's automatic. If you are emotionally triggered by your child's behavior, they throw something across the room, your first instinct is to say no. Don't stop, or something like that. Unfortunately, with kids, it's like gasoline on the fire. And you probably experienced this.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a challenge. You have to really think about this and do it. But what you have to do is think about these pop-up tantrums, which seem like pop-up tantrums, because when it gets, I always gotta have this analogy with the hill. As it goes up the hill, you can still pull it back. But when it goes over the edge, it's over the edge. There's a fire, okay? It's like a pop-up fire. And I use the same analogy, stop, drop, and roll, okay? So what you do is, the first thing you do, instead of saying stop, no, or whatever, what you want to do is you want to call out the problem. And so you can use an alert word that is not no, because the action, what you want to do is just stop the action because it's going in direction, falling down, like the place you don't want it to be.
Exactly.
So you want it to stop first. You really want it to stop and redirect and turn around immediately. But remember, you don't have that kind of guideline unless you literally physically pick up your kid and haul them somewhere. And then you know that doesn't work to teach them. See, this stop, drop, and roll procedure will help you teach your child what to do when you and I are to the point where I'm not listening to you, you're not listening to me, we're not doing anything, right. It's not working, and you tilt, right?
Exactly. Oh, yes. I remember
so the days. You get to tilt, and instead of saying stop tilting, because think about it, if you're upset and someone says stop being upset,
That just makes you more upset.
So what you want to do is you want to let the child know that you are immediately joining them in their problem solving effort, because they got a problem. You say, my favorite is, uh-oh, you have a problem. Right. And that's the first thing I say is, uh-oh, you have a problem. Because instead of, I have a problem with you throwing your cup. Right. The deal is you have a problem. Your cup is empty. I wasn't coming fast enough. Your whatever reason that cup got chucked across the room. You know what happened, or at least you have an idea. Right. So again, you got to stop your energy from I'm upset about this cup to find out. You say, uh-oh, I see a cup flying, because that's the reality of the situation. Exactly. It's not judged to be good or bad. It is, hello, everybody, pay attention to this right now. This is going on. And I want everybody to learn from this situation right now. Okay. Because we've got a learning situation. It's kind of like the siren on the fire truck. Stop, drop, and roll. Here comes the fire truck. Stop. Uh-oh, there's a cup. You're climbing the cabinets. You were spilled the water. Uh-oh, there is a problem. So when we have a problem, it's not me against you. It's not me against you. It's us together. We have a problem. So we've got a problem together. We're going to go and try to solve this problem together. Uh-oh, your cup is empty and I didn't come fast enough, or you didn't know where to put it, or whatever. You got to say it out loud. So that's the stop. And the drop is drop your expectation, drop your whatever, and then drop these words that explain what it is. Drop to your child's eyeball level and say, okay, I get it. You don't like broccoli. You don't want to eat it. You are done. We're putting it away. You know, you have to get the hug it out. You have to get to the point where your child can actually listen to you before you can have that redirection, right? You want to do it. So you got to get to their level, drop to their level, get to eye contact, start talking to them about what they're worried about their drama. Vocalize their drama in full sentences. You don't like that cup. You wanted me to come faster. You are mad about losing your video time. You know, whatever you know their problem is, say it out loud so they hear what that sounds like. Because the next time, potentially, instead of throwing the cup, they'll say, my cup is empty. Right? Because
so you're giving them the words.
You're giving them the words. So instead of like my life of speech therapy, how many times can I get a kid to say a word in 30 minutes? My guide for every parent, when you're in a situation where your child doesn't have the words, that's why they're using behavior. They don't have the words, right? When you say use your words instead of hit me, you're telling your child to speak a language they don't know how to use.
So I've got an off question for you. So what about us parents who are on the spectrum and we can't interpret our child's intentions? So how, I mean, that was probably the biggest difficulty I had in raising my kids when they were young, because I didn't get it. What they were trying to communicate. And so a lot of times it was a guessing game. I mean, is even a guess good?
Yeah. So the way that I would do it is, okay, so if you're an adult on the spectrum and you have a child and your filter, like your nonverbal cues, because again, that's part of what a technical nonverbal learning issue is, having trouble reading that. So you have to go back to your 3D, what you see. And so my recommendation is, if you're, again, you can feel energy of when people kind of like you or don't like you, are kind of resonating with you or not resonating. You might not catch all subtle things about everything, but you can feel people's energy, right? So you can, especially your child, especially your child. So if nobody else's, you can feel your child. So again, you really, what the goal, of course, is to, as a habit, understand what your child's communication behaviors look like. Let them teach you their nonverbal communication behaviors. Watch them, because the thing that people with autism have is an amazing ability to understand algorithms. The if-then, 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 if-then. If my child does this, he means X. If my child does this, he means X. So the problem is people innately who were potentially not verbal speakers, but more intuitive communicators, because that's what's going to happen with a parent who has, you know, their own sort of spoken language limitations. Doesn't matter if it's autism or anything else. If you are a nonverbal, shy kind of parent, you know, a lot of parents who homeschool are themselves shy parents, right? So that kind of problem that you're not a talky talker. Your child is also, you know, you're so connected that you basically are reading your child's mind all day and anticipating their needs. That's a problem too, because you're not providing the language models your child needs. So know this. If you do know that yourself, you are not talking very much because you're relying on your intuitive connection with your child, that's a disservice to them. So I recommend you talk more about the 3D things that you have to do together. You don't have to try to read their mind so much, but if you are changing a diaper or getting dressed or whatever, talk about the decisions you make. We picked this shirt today because it has long sleeves because it's cold outside, right? Use your because's. Use that word because when you say things, instead of just saying, go get your jacket, go get your jacket because it's time for us to leave. And when you provide that extra bit of language that you're thinking, you're already thinking it. Just say it out loud. That's going to help your child learn language more easily, because you don't know if your child has limited verbal or not. You know, like I said, it's your job to help bring them up. But how you do that is by telling them the words they need. So again, if you watch them and they love to play ABCs and they love to line up letters and they always do the 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, they don't want anybody else, but just ones and twos, you know, whatever they decide to do that day. Exactly. They will, right? You know, they decide to do. So you watch them and see it. You don't have to guess why they're doing it. I recommend you get some numbers and line them up next to yourself and feel how that feels, right? What is, what could be interesting about this? Is it a pattern your child is interested in? I've got one mom that has a little guy who is, has no words really, but he is so interested in the physics of objects. He wants to know how they balance. He wants to know how they spin. He wants to know if he can balance and spin everything. He'll pick up a cup or a phone or everything. And so I coached his mom to start using physics terms in her spoken language, even though he's nonverbal. He doesn't know how to ask for a glass of water, right? The things that he's thinking about is, how does it balance? Which way should it be? Right side is heavier than left side. Like, he cares about those concepts. So when his mom provides those language models, she just sits next to him and plays with stuff like he plays with stuff to try to feel the feelings that he would like. What's exciting about this? What's cool? What's interesting? What could spark? Because remember, just like we're sparked to do behaviors when we're negatively triggered, we're also sparked when we're positively triggered to do things like, hey, that's cool. I want to do that with you again. And that connects you, right? Where you were feeling disconnected and I don't know what my child wants, and all they do is line things up or spin things. So start lining things up and spinning things yourself. Get next to them. Figure out what they're doing. Why? Why do they do that? And then you talk about your experience, not just the physical experience, but this is where it's challenging. Again, if you, if you're yourself struggling with this, but it's a good lesson for you. How do you feel? Oh, that was funny. That made me laugh. Oh, I didn't like that. Ooh, that scared me, right? Mm-hmm. When you talk about how you feel while you're doing things together with your child, that's the model, right? Because ultimately you want your child to say, I like that. That's cool. I don't like that. I don't want to do that again, because that's good information for you. But unless your child sees those language models, they're not going to learn from them. And if you're homeschooling an only child, then you have to provide it all. You have to provide it all. Exactly. You have to talk like a kid sometimes, because kids like to watch kids. Like if they've got siblings, they watch their siblings. If they're at preschool or church or wherever, they watch their friends, their peers. But especially this past year, everybody's been home and the moms are intuitively making their plans and thinking their stuff, and they're talking about it with dad, but they're not reviewing and talking with their kids to involve them in the process. And that's how you learn. That's how you learn what works. And, you know, like I said, your audience knows this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, we're already halfway through, so I'm going to give Marcy a quick break, and we're going to hear from our sponsor, Knotgrass History. And so I'm going to put up the ticker, but I want to just tell you a little bit about Knotgrass History. They help families like yours succeed at homeschooling. Students enjoy learning and parents feel confident teaching. Knotgrass History curriculum uses narrative lessons, primary source documents, historical novels and biographies, and hands-on activities to create engaging learning experiences for children of all ages and abilities. Your family can study U.S. history, world history, geography, government, civics, and economics. Knotgrass History helps history learners become history makers. You can visit them at knotgrass.com. That's Knotgrass.com to learn more about them today. So we want to thank Knotgrass for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Conversations. And definitely check out their website at knotgrass.com, and also on our YouTube channel at Sped Homeschool. Just look up that YouTube channel. But we have a lot of unboxings and reviews, video reviews of their curriculum. So you'll want to check those out as well under our review crew playlist. So I'm going to bring back Marcy. This has been a great conversation. I just want you to know that if you are joining us, you can put your comments and questions in the feed. If anything is just triggered, I want to share about this, or I've got a question about how do I handle this. And definitely share with some friends too that you think they really need to watch this. It's answering a lot of questions. Maybe you just had a conversation this last week. How are we going to make it through the summer? Yeah. I've heard a lot of parents saying that. I think one parent texted me and she goes, I think one of us is going to die before the end of the summer. But I think they'll be fine.
I do too. I think that especially now that families are starting to be able to get out again and, at least here in the United States, we've got summer coming. So,
exactly.
People are able to get out and run around. And I think, one of the things that I'm recommending to the families that I work with is to really take some time this summer to connect with your family. Don't worry so much about numbers and grades and things like that. Take a little time, you'll know how much time you need, a couple weeks or a month or whatever, that you just kind of, put all that stuff aside. It helps you restart, doesn't it, Peggy?
Yeah,
to kind of really get a brand new focus, because you could be, even during that period of time, investigating new curriculums or services or things you want to try, and then you come into it with a fresh set of eyes. And
you do, and a little more enthusiasm than you had before too. I mean, yeah, we're starting our 19th year homeschooling. I know what that summer feels like, and so many just keep plugging along. Do take those breaks, have fun, play with your kids. And it's like Marcy was talking about, I love what you talk about connecting with your kids, because I found that the two things that I did with my boys that really connected us was to get in and do Legos with my oldest, because that was his thing.
Yeah.
And my second one, I had to put costumes on, whether I liked it or not.
Pretend play is my favorite.
Yes.
And
then
now you had mentioned that you had a late talker. Your middle one was a late talker,
Peggy. He was the costume one. Yes.
The costume one. Now, and then you also also gave it, we were talking before the show started about the strategy that you used with your son, because therapy didn't work so well for you. And that's kind of what's happening with the parents who are working with me. They're realizing that, very much like Peggy's talking about her sort of turning the public school system upside down. I kind of turn the speech therapy system upside down instead of focusing on pulling words out of kids and how many times can I get kids to say words, because that's how we're judging how well they're talking, is how many words they say. But really, it doesn't, it's more about quality than quantity. And it's more about a child saying their own words, right? Not imitating what you want when you want to say it, but actually saying the words that we want them to say so that they can share their ideas and wisdom and needs, you know, wants and needs, of course they do. But but really, how do we know if they're learning if they can't have conversation about the camping trip you took together or the train ride or the restaurant or the meal you cooked or those things? You don't know for sure if your child is learning, and even if they're learning, did they enjoy it? Are they having a good time with this? Is this like how they want to be in life? Because, you know, if you're making choices to control your child's life and education at the same time, you know, I think that parents are making real conscious decisions about the activities they're doing with their kids. And and so that's what I do with parents, is really equip them with strategies that they can use depending on where their child is in the process. If they're nonverbal, then they need strategies to help them, empower them to learn that words will work even for them, that they can use words, that it's easier than they think. In fact, in my book, it's called If It Isn't Fun, It Isn't Fun. Because if I remembered having a lot of speech therapy sessions when I was back doing things the old way, pulling words out of kids, where it was no fun. And the kids were crying, and I, or when I was, I'd go into a family's home and they didn't, you know, relate to me. So they would hide from me, and, you know, and I wasn't getting any work done. So that's really in those kinds of circumstances. That's when I really started to coach parents. And when the parents were willing to, you know, make a few little changes, just kind of like I was talking about earlier, when this situation happens in your household, when there is a meltdown or there is a communication breakdown, instead of just steamrolling through it, take your time with it, work through it. Talk about the words that your child wants to say, that they would say if they could talk, because that's the words they need right, then and there.
Yeah. And you have to be, like you were talking about, and in the first half an hour, be willing to give them those words and pour in those words. And,
And those so if you don't know what your child's thinking, talk about what you see. Yeah, like you said, you know they like Legos, so you can play Legos. And then what happens is, while you're playing Legos, or after you put on that costume and you dig in and you get the connection started because you pick the thing your child likes, then they show you, don't they, Peggy?
Yes, they absolutely do. They're so good at that. But you have to have that relationship.
Yeah, they need the motivation. They need the motivation, and they need the encouragement, because remember, it's anxiety, some level of anxiety that's blocking this process. It could be a physical thing, right? But most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, it's an environmental or an emotional mindset thing. My kid's not a talker. He's not going to be a talker, so I'm not going to waste my time talking and modeling words.
Right. Yeah.
That's a mindset.
That just makes it worse than it makes it better.
But you don't understand. But then and the older the kids get, the more parents worry, right? If they're not using spoken language, because they go out in the world and they see other kids who are talking, and they compare. And when they compare, then again, that's a mindset thing that's going to take you away from your child. Whenever you feel that disconnect, like you want to spend time Googling because you don't feel comfortable being around your child, right? You can feel that way when there's that disconnect. Instead of avoiding it, you've got to overcome that. You've got to overcome that fear and dig in and get your child to trust you. So your speech has to be very attractive You know, very attractive. Mm-hmm. You have to talk like kids. You have to give them the models that they want to hear. Like you said, if they might like to talk about Legos, then talk about Legos.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And there's something about that. And I think, you know, the question I have for you is, you know, what is the secret to reducing those unfortunate behaviors, or at least minimizing them, if not, like we talked about at the beginning, overcoming them?
Right. Well, the ultimate secret mm-hmm. is replacing them with spoken language, because spoken language is an easier way to communicate than a physical response, right?
Right.
Now, that's obviously the long term, that's the end game. Is what you want. But that's literally teaching your child a whole new language surrounding their drama, right? And it takes time. So how it works, though, how you do it is you plan it ahead by scheduling in to your day language facilitation opportunities. And what I call these opportunities is a period of time. And what you do is you choose little things throughout your day. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to get 2 to 3 hours of this focused time where literally all you do is talk about your child's problems, needs, wants, and you talk about the methods and strategies that you use to meet those needs. Okay. So for example, when you first wake up in the morning, everybody's got needs. Everybody's got to get up and go to the bathroom, right? But every family does that morning thing in a different way. The kids sleep in different, you know, whatever. But how you know how it does, that period of time right after you wake up, that first 20 minutes is when you have the most opportunity to connect with your child, because there's no distractions. You're both waking up out of slumber and there's no video, there's no whatever. So you shouldn't have any of that when you first wake up. In the morning, talk to your child about how you want to help them throughout the day. Talk to them about the things you're going to do. Two things you're going to do. Say, today is a school day and we're going to work on math. Today is a outside day and we're going for a hike. So you just connect with them. So you let them know, I'm here to help you. In fact, I think about your job more like a tour guide than a parent, where you're like, we're going to get through the day together. And I'm going to help you get through each what I call event of the day. So the first event is getting out of bed and getting everybody's potty done. And then you eat. And then you brush teeth. And then you get dressed. And then you go out or play, or, you know, you go 20 to 30 minute chunks of time. And if you pick a few of those that you just decide through this event, bath time, getting dressed, this meal, I'm going to focus on my child 100%. I'm going to put my expectations away. I'm going to focus on my child and helping them be the most successful they can through this event. Right. By empowering them to be responsible. Right. You're not helping them by doing it for them. Right. You're empowering them by helping them do it. So you might have to help if your child doesn't know how to brush his teeth, or he needs help reaching the clothes, or needs help deciding what to wear. But that's what you talk through. So you say, I'm going to use my getting dressed time as language teaching time today. And you pick through your day 5 or 6 of those. And you'll be surprised. You can get a lot of language facilitation done in the car on the way to the store, or in the bath, because you talk about, you know, those repetitive things. And so if you consciously plan your day to have 2 to 3 hours of just when you're talking with your child, because what you most parents don't realize is how little they are actually talking to their child and giving those language models and providing the things they need, because they're in autopilot. you know,
right. There's yeah. problems, or they have other things going on in their head. Right. And
especially the things mm-hmm. that you do every day, you're especially mm-hmm. more inclined to be on autopilot, but those are the best mm-hmm. ones to use mm-hmm. for this yeah. language modeling yeah. because you can have repetitive things and it's mm-hmm. always the language you need. You need toothbrush, yeah. you need dressed, and you need, if your child has a favorite dinosaur shirt, they need to know the green dinosaur shirt always mm-hmm. hangs here, and it's a school shirt or a not school shirt. Like, mm-hmm. they need to know, when can I wear dinosaur shirt because I want to wear it every day? Like, if mm-hmm. that's a thing for your child, right. exactly. it's an opportunity. That's their drama, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
why can't I have dinosaur shirt today? There's a whole new language to learn. It's in the laundry. It's mm-hmm. dirty. Let's go. You know, why? Whys mm-hmm. and becauses about the things that you do every day. Mm-hmm. This gives you the opportunity to provide the language your kids have missed.
Yes. Oh, that's great. Yeah, tour guide. I exactly. love that definition because yeah, it truly is what we can do. But we, like you say, we get on this autopilot and we just don't even think of using the words because we ourselves understand it, but we forget that they do not. And they
or you might, they might understand it. Yeah, they mm-hmm. might understand it, but nobody's saying out loud. Right. And that's how they can learn the words. Because mm-hmm. if you want them to start to use their words instead of their intuition to just, I know that you know that mm-hmm. I know the cookies are in that cabinet. So I'm just going to bang on the cabinet every time. And if you consistently just give me cookies when I bang, then yeah. no language is going to come.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah. that yeah. is an opportunity if mm-hmm. that's going on in your house and you've got the same behavior over and over again for the same need that, and you're not facilitating language, you're missing that opportunity.
Yeah. Opportunity. That is the word. It is an opportunity. It's not a misbehavior.
No, yes. it's an opportunity mm-hmm. because they're telling you it's communication. Mm-hmm. And when your child comes to you with their needs, wants, excitement, drama, mm-hmm. anything, that's what I call the golden egg. Because you, yeah. when they're on their own and they're apart and they're not mm-hmm. sharing their energy, you can't help them. But yes. when they're coming at you and they're in your face needing something from mm-hmm. you, that then they're connected. It's like mm-hmm. I use this analogy like the birthday cake. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants a piece of birthday cake, but nobody's going to run in and grab it. They right. wait. They wait mm-hmm. for the song. They wait for you to get a plate and cut it and put it on the mm-hmm. plate and put a fork and give it to them. They wait and they know they're going to get it. But yeah. they wait and they focus. They're watching you cut it. And they're watching, mm-hmm. waiting for it to arrive. Right. The cake. This is how it goes with your child's drama. Your mm-hmm. child's drama is just like the birthday cake. They want it. Mm-hmm. And if they know that you're going to deliver it, they'll mm-hmm. wait and watch. And so if you are delivering birthday cake and you say, I know you want birthday cake, so I will cut a piece of birthday cake. I will put your birthday cake on a plate for you because it won't be messy. And I will give you a fork to eat your cake and I'll put it here in the cake and give you the plate to give you. Now that's a lot of language.
That is a lot. But it's what they need.
It's what they need. It's what they need. And that's how you can take advantage of just giving your kid a piece of cake, right?
Right.
So if you get 2 to 3 hours of this into your day, you'll see fewer tantrums. Why? Because your child will know that you understand their drama because you'll be talking about it all day long.
Right.
But when you exactly. don't talk about their drama, they got to show you with behavior. You get it? You get it? Do you understand I'm upset? If you don't understand I'm upset, I'm going to show you.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
And that's what you don't want.
Yeah. So agree. You know, I've read so many parenting books when I first started parenting my kids because I had no idea what I was doing. And over time, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh yeah, and I did that and that. So I kind of feel like I did something right.
Of course you did. And you know what? Just like every parent, and parents, you know, feel like the super nanny kind of calling parents out on their stuff or whatever. The thing is, these mindset tricks, right? They play tricks on you, your worry, your comparison, that other stuff, and then your guilt because then you, oh, I didn't do that, or I'm a bad mom, or I'm whatever. all of that stuff, the guilt because you didn't do it, it's a downward spiral. It keeps you from doing it. So no, we're not here. We're just here to enlighten you about what could be going on, right? Because if you've got all the physical things worked out, right? You've been to the doctor, you've got all that stuff going, but your child is still struggling and you want to have a good summer, right? Yeah, you don't want to fight through your summer. You don't want to negotiate and have your child be sneaky and stealing things because their energy is diverged from you. You know, you want to join together, keep them together. When they know you understand their drama, right? That gives you the power to say, look, I know your drama. You know, I know your drama and you're trying to push me to get me to break the rules here, but you know, we've got rules and that helps you maintain those boundaries. So there's no question because that's a big reason that kids have tantrums is because they don't, they push it too far because they didn't have a boundary in the first place.
Yes. Yeah. So Marcy, you have so much information. I'm sure we could talk for hours and hours more than this, but I would just like for you to talk a little bit about where our parents can find you so that if they go, oh, I need to listen to this lady more.
Do you have a graphic?
Yes, perfect. I do.
So I do. You can, I just like the preschool or the homeschool website, I have a lot of resources for parents that kind of in all different sorts of ways that you can learn. So on Facebook, you can read blog posts. I have a group there called Language Facilitation Resources on Facebook. I wrote a book called If It Isn't Fun, It Isn't Fun, Teach Your Child to Talk Faster Than Speech Therapy. It is available on Amazon and Audible. You can find it there. I also have a podcast. It's called the Language Facilitation Helpline. You can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. And then I'm on MeWe because there's some parents that don't do Facebook. And so they are looking for another way to connect and start the conversation. I'm kind of new over there. And I have nearly 400 videos on YouTube where parents can go to learn about apraxia, about autism, about the difference between autism and lay talking, about is it this or that or the other thing, how to stop prompting, how to, why tech is tech addiction, overcoming all of that stuff, because every behavior is communication and you can learn about it. And then I also have a free 1.5 hour class on my website, wavesofcommunication.com. You can book a call with me to talk with me before, you know, you enlist to work with me as a coach. So there's all kinds of ways to learn about wavesofcommunication.com. Yeah, is the best place to go. Cool. So thanks again for sharing all those resources. Excellent. That's it.
That's great.
We're helping families all over the world. Most of my families are international. We've got 20 different countries. And then the other thing, parents are, you know, often if you're a bilingual household, you speak more than one language in your household. Lots of parents feel like they have to drop their home language to only focus on one. And that is not true. The parents in my program, they're all working bilingually simultaneously to get their kids talking. And it doesn't matter why your child is late talking or how late they are. I've got kids in my families because I don't work with the kids. I work only with parents. And I have parents who have kids from 18 months to 18 years in my program.
Very cool.
So if your child, maybe they have some needs-based language, but they're not conversational. They're not social. They're not getting out in public. They're not, you know, they can't get a job or a girlfriend, right? Because they can't use social language. I can help you with that. I can help you work on elevating your child's spoken language, evolving it so that they can share their wisdom with the world, because spoken languages, you know, sign language and stuff, it only gets you so far. Pictures, it only gets you so far. Spoken language to really be able to share everything, your needs, your feelings, and your ideas. That's the big thing. That helps us empower.
Oh, this has been a great hour. Thank you so much, Marcy, for all you've had to share. And
thank you for having me. It's been great.
And I definitely encourage you all to check out Marcy's resources that she shared. They will be in the description on the YouTube channel as well for the full interview, as well as we'll take some shorter segments out of this and republish them next week. And of course, the podcast will come out on Sunday. But lots of great resources for you to dig into that she has. So definitely. definitely do that. And so thanks again, Marcy. It's been so fun. And we are going to continue this topic again next week, not tomorrow. I need to breathe for a while. But we're going to talk about relationships that improve child behavior with LaFaya Mitchell. And so I think Marcy and I touched on that just, you know, a little bit as relationships. So we're going to really dive into that relationship side next week. And my guest has written a bunch of mini books, and even somebody that helped her write one, she goes, you have to just call this the LaFaya way. This is the way you do things, and it works. So anyways, just some cute little books that, that definitely are extremely helpful. But I just want to let you know, Marcy, Amy Stacy from Facebook says, awesome, so helpful. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thanks, Amy. Thanks for joining us, everybody. It was my pleasure. And like I said, check me out on YouTube. Tons of resources. And I'm live every Thursday on YouTube. So awesome. You can join me and ask questions about your child's communication. Yeah, it's a great resource.
Super. Awesome. And I'd also want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode. Definitely check out their resources. They have homeschool history, geography, and a variety of economics. I reviewed that one for high school, but all of those are on their website at knotgrass.com. So thanks everyone. And for joining us again for the live session. And I know most of you actually join us on our podcast. Thank you for downloading us and listening through this conversation, and we'll see you all again next week. But thanks again, Marcy, and we'll see you right here, same time, same place next week.